The internet's changed a lot of things, one of those being how you can buy and sell things. I remember about 3 years ago, I guess it was, we had a couch we were getting rid of, and I made my maiden voyage on Craigslist. And took the picture of it and got it uploaded, and immediately got an email back from a young lady who was really interested in this couch. So I gave her my phone number, told her to call me. She did, and she told me how that she was a single mother and she didn't have any furniture in her apartment. She was really in need of this, but it would be a week or so before she got paid. Would I hold it for her till then? And I said, I'll be glad to. And during that time, I got a number of other emails coming in wanting to buy the couch. And I said, no, the couch has been taken care of. The young lady and I, we talked again somewhere midweek. She said, yeah, Monday I get my paycheck. I'll be ready for it. I'll call you. Well, Monday came and no call, and Tuesday no call. So Wednesday I called her back and I said, we've been talking. I'm holding this couch for you. When do you want it? Click. Is what I heard on the other end. So much for being gracious, right? So much for doing something that's kind. I imagine that all of us have experienced something of that nature before, whether real or perceived, that someone has been ungrateful to us. Someone has shown a lack of gratitude for something that we believe that we've done that's good. But I would suggest to you this morning that none of us have any idea of what ingratitude really is when we compare that to what our Lord experiences. Have you ever wondered about God as He looks down on His creation and He sees a segment of that creation that is so ungrateful that rather than acknowledge Him as God, they would create a theory that we came from monkeys rather than from a creator? And you think about how many times, even has been mentioned already twice this morning, about what God has done, but yet so many times how unappreciative His creation is concerning that. This morning, what we're going to talk about is nothing new and earth-shattering. What we're going to discuss is nothing that you've never heard before. No doors are going to be open that have been closed before this point. But it's a reminder to us that while it is not new, it is still very easy to allow ourselves to waver when it comes to gratitude toward God. This morning is not to teach something we don't know, but rather to stir us up to what we have known for a very long time. And this morning, what I'd like for us to do is to talk about gratitude toward God. Gratitude for what He's done for us by looking at really several different areas. And I want to begin this morning by actually looking at a very basic idea for Christians, and that's the idea of gratitude for salvation. We just heard in our reading from the book of Colossians. The book of Colossians is a very interesting book. It has quite a lengthy introduction to it. In fact, pretty much the first chapter is an introduction to the book. And we come on down into chapter 2, and much of what we heard read this morning is kind of a completion of that introduction. And as we come down to verses 6 and 7, as Paul now is beginning to start making his point from that introduction, he says in verses 6 and 7, therefore, so we know the point's coming, as you received Jesus Christ the Lord, so walk in Him, rooted and built up in Him and established in the faith, just as you were taught, abounding in thanksgiving. It's interesting as we look at this, the Apostle Paul is telling us, here is what needs to happen once you become a Christian. In fact, if you look there in the beginning of verse 6, where he talks about the concept of receiving Christ, I think what we have under discussion there is the point of baptism. In fact, I think it ties in very much with what we would find over just a few more verses in verse 12, where he says, having been buried with Him in baptism, really we see a package here. The idea that salvation now has come. You know, for a very long time, Christians have worked out the plan of salvation in 5 points, right? We tell people they need to hear and believe and such. I would suggest to you that what we find here are perhaps the steps of staying saved. We find the idea of baptism being laid down. We have received Christ through baptism. But if we're going to remain saved, if we're going to keep our salvation, look at what the Apostle Paul says must follow. He says next after this that we're to be rooted. The idea of having a lasting foundation. The idea that we are not that kind of plant that the Lord described that grows up for a season but then withers in the heat. We are rooted. We are firmly planted. We are here to stay. And he continues on and he says, not only are you rooted, but he also says you are built up. And what we have here is that those roots are giving us life. That in our spirituality, in our Christianity, we are seeing a growth. In other words, if we've been a Christian for 10 years, we're not the same kind of Christian we were 10 years ago. We've grown. We've developed. We've matured. And the Apostle Paul says, once you're baptized and once you're rooted in the faith, then you're built up. But he doesn't stop there. He continues on and he says, you then are established in the faith. The idea that our actions are impacted by a godly outlook. Because we're rooted and have those foundations, and because we've matured in our knowledge, the apostle then says, you can be established because when the situations present themselves to make a decision, you're going to make the right one. You're not going to do it in some kind of way where God is not considered. You're not going to make decisions off the cuff. You're going to be established in that faith that you've been working on throughout your life. But interestingly enough, this isn't where he stops. And maybe it would be for us. Maybe if someone said to us, what must I do to be saved? We could tell them. And if someone said, what must I do to stay saved? We could tell them these kinds of things. But I want you to note that's not where the Apostle Paul ends his list. He continues on and he says, also, you need to be abounding, or overflowing is a term I think gets the idea across a little bit better, in thanksgiving. So not only have we become Christians through the waters of baptism, not only have we laid those roots and built ourselves up and established ourselves in the decisions that we've made, but every step of the way, we are also abounding, overflowing in thanksgiving to God. In fact, I don't think it's too much of an overstatement to say that our journey to God is not complete without gratitude. We cannot be ungrateful Christians. It is simply impossible to be that. And I believe that's what the Apostle Paul is going to tell us. The things that he's going to write that we'll look at is going to make that point that if we are going to be saved, that if we are going to stay saved, we must be a grateful people for what God has done for us. And so as we consider that, we need to understand that the kind of gratitude that the Apostle Paul is discussing comes only from knowing God. Did you catch that in Colossians here? Note what he says. He says, as you received Christ Jesus the Lord. Then he describes these other things, but coming to the end, he says, you are going to abound in thanksgiving. Why? Because you know Jesus. You understand what he's done. You understand the sacrifice that he's made. And because of that, you are abounding. You are overflowing in thanksgiving and gratitude for him. I want you to take this passage and I want you to contrast it with another of the writings of Paul. As the Apostle Paul opens up the book of Romans, we know that he is discussing the wickedness of mankind. And I want you to pay attention particularly to what we find here toward the beginning. He says, for although they knew God, but listen to what follows. They did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. As the apostle here is going to describe the wickedness both of the Jews and the Gentiles. Here in particular, as he's talking about the sins of the Gentiles, he says at one time they knew God. But isn't it interesting what he says? They refused to thank him. They refused to give him the gratitude that he deserved. And as a result of that, what they find is that their salvation is lost. We only can have the gratitude we need when we know who the Lord is. And so perhaps we should consider that. And as we think about our own lives and we think, why am I having all of these problems? Why is it I'm not growing? Why is it I'm not rooted? Why am I not established? Maybe the question comes down to this. Could these more frequent spiritual problems be caused by less frequent gratitude to God? Think for just a minute in your own life. The last time that you truly thanked God for something. The last time that you truly expressed your gratitude to Him. Maybe it was this morning. Maybe it was in your prayer before you went to bed last night. Maybe something in your life happened yesterday that you've been praying about and you saw the answer of God. But if I'm asked this question, and I have to ponder, and I have to remember the days or the weeks or the months that it's been since I've truly acknowledged my gratitude toward Him, maybe that's a step in understanding why spiritual problems are occurring. And so the Apostle Paul, as he writes to a number of different groups, he explains to them that every day should be a renewal of gratitude toward God to help us appreciate Him more and to help us to avoid those pitfalls of feeling sorry for ourselves, of thinking God doesn't care, but rather replacing those things with the idea of thanksgiving to God. And that's what I want us to see. As the apostle writes, and we can look at several passages, we're going to kind of keep it here though in the book of Ephesians and Philippians primarily. And I want us to note what the apostle has to say about thanksgiving, about gratitude. Let's begin in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 4. As he writes to the Ephesians, he says, "Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead, let there be thanksgiving." I want you to notice here this passage in the context of our topic this morning of gratitude. The Apostle Paul says there are things that ought not to be present in our lives. One of those is filthy language. That's something Christian families teach their children from very early on. If you're in the South, you say don't use those ugly words. And we know what that means. I think you couldn't ask for a better description of that. You tell your child, that's ugly. Don't say it. And the child gets that point very clearly. And so cursing is something that we are not going to be involved in. And blasphemy is something we're not going to be involved in. But he continues on and he says, not only filthy language, but also worthless language. Those of you who endured Proverbs with me just a few weeks ago, do we not find that idea that the fool is known by his worthless talk? The fool is known because he just talks and he never says anything. The Apostle Paul says, get rid of that. And he goes on and he says one other. He says, you need to get rid of all of your risque language. And I think this is something that impacts perhaps us more than the others. That sometimes we want to get just as close to that ugly talk as we can. We want to say something that can be taken one of two ways so that if we're questioned about it, we can take the connotation completely out and we can say, all I said was, and it sounds so innocent. But the apostle says, you know what it is. And this language that borders, this language that is risque, he says, get rid of all of it. But note, he doesn't just say to get rid of all of it. He says, remove all of this and what? Let it be replaced with thanksgiving. Maybe I'm talking to somebody who has a problem with that. Language is a whole lot like alcohol and drugs. It's a whole lot like pornography. It becomes quite habit-forming in the things that we say. And if we get very used to saying something that's wrong, it's very hard to quit that. Maybe you're someone who years ago, when you weren't a Christian, you really weren't trained in how to speak properly, the things that are off limits. And it may be even now, all these years later, that when you have a problem or when something hurts you quite suddenly, you drop something on your foot, there's an impulse to say that. But what does the Apostle Paul say? He says, when you have that impulse, when you're about to say something, replace it with thanksgiving. Now, isn't that an interesting therapy for correcting our speech? That if I'm about to say something filthy, I thank God instead. If I'm about just to enter into a conversation that's worthless, gossip, rather I thank God. Instead of that risque language, I thank God. And what I'm going to find is not only my language improving, I'll find my attitude improving. I'll find my relationship with God improving as a result. Well, let's look at a second example of this. If you'll go with me back over to the book of Ephesians, chapter 5. Here is a section that we're quite familiar with, but let's read it in the context of our thoughts this morning. We're kind of picking up mid-thought here in verse 14, where he says, "Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time," or redeeming the time, "because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody to the Lord with your heart, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ." What does he say? He says there's something you need to get rid of as a Christian. If you are idle, and you're letting your mind just be filled with these worthless thoughts. He compares it here to drunkenness, whether that's literal or somewhat symbolic for just this attitude that you have, that you're kind of in a stupor, that you're not appreciating what God has done. He said, replace that. Address one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. But then notice what else he says in verse 20. He says, get rid of this idleness, these worthless thoughts, and replace them with thanksgiving to God. Wouldn't it be something if every time we are tempted to sit around and to think about things that are just not appropriate, we started singing hymns of thanksgiving? Now, there might be times when we can't sing those out loud. It might be that we're in a situation where it wouldn't be terribly appropriate for us to burst out in song. But I can tell you, those songs can be in our minds, can't they? And when we think about the kinds of songs that Harold led us in this morning, what if this week we made a point that we were going to meditate on those words, that when we were tempted to have idle thoughts, worthless thoughts, we replace those? Would we find our spiritual condition improving? Would we find our relationship with God improving? Absolutely we would. Look at one other passage along this line with me. Going to the book of Philippians this time. We look to chapter 4, verses 6 and 7. And he says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Now maybe this morning you've said, "Well, I don't have a problem with cursing." That's a good thing. And you say, "I really don't have a problem with worthless talk. I don't involve myself in that kind of thing." That's great as well. And you say, "I never involve myself in risque talk or with idle things." That's great. But I have a feeling there are not many of us in the room who could say, "I don't have any problem about being anxious about something. I don't have any problem about worrying concerning things." Now, let me make a point here. It's okay to be concerned. It's okay to be concerned. You know, if your child is supposed to be home at 10 and he's not there, and it's 11 and it's 12, you've got a right to be concerned. The Lord's not forbidding that. What the Lord is talking about here is when we sit around worrying about things that either we can't change or we don't trust God to change. And so what does the apostle say? He says, do you lack this trust in the power of God? Do you sit around wringing your hands and worrying what's going to happen? How am I going to pay my bills? How are things going to work out? What's going to happen in the future? How am I going to handle these things? He says, don't do it. Be anxious for nothing, but what? He says, replace it with prayer and thanksgiving. Has the Lord let us down? No, if we're honest with ourselves, we look back over our lives and we see all of the times when maybe we worried fruitlessly about a host of things, but the Lord came through for us. The Lord allowed things to work out. What if every time we're sitting around and worrying and having anxiety over the future, we thanked God for what He had done for us in the past? And we thank Him that we can rely on Him in the future. Do you think our relationship with God would improve? Do you think our spirituality would improve? Absolutely. The Apostle Paul, we'll look at a passage here in just a little while that I think will show us clearly he practiced what he preached. If there was anybody who could have been anxious, if there was anybody who could have been intimidated and scared about things, it was the Apostle Paul. But he said, get rid of all of that and replace it with thanksgiving. So what's our point then? Well, as we think about this replacement of allowing our gratitude to replace those things that ought not to be there, I think it then brings us to the conclusion that if we are going to be a people who appreciate what God has done, we count our blessings, as we just sang, and we don't pay so much attention to the bruises. Because most of us, I think, are quite alike, that it's much more easy to pay attention to the bad than the good. In fact, when the good comes along, a lot of times we don't appreciate it until it's replaced by the bad, do we? You want to really appreciate your good health? Get sick. You'll appreciate it. You really want to appreciate the blessings that you've gotten in a financial way? Lose those, and you'll appreciate them. And so what God says to us is we've got to exercise trust in Him, but we've also got to acknowledge that those things come from Him, those good things. And that's what I want us to think about here as we bring our thoughts to a conclusion. I think the nation of Israel stands as a really good, bad example of exactly what we're talking about. Before we get too hard on them, however, I want to cut a break for Israel. Yes, their life in Egypt was awful. It was hard, the work that they had. But I want you to think about where they came. Some of you have traveled that journey that Israel took out of Egypt. I was talking to a lady one time, and she said, I will never, ever criticize Israel again after traveling through that region. The bleakness, the barrenness of that area, where you go for miles and miles and it seems that there is nothing of any kind of life anywhere around. That's where they were. They ate manna every day. You say, why weren't they grateful? Well, why aren't you grateful for your leftovers? Your kids ever complain? We ever get to the third meal with our leftovers? Says, can't we eat anything besides this? Imagine Israel day after day after day after day. Hostile residents. They couldn't even take the shortcut to Canaan, could they? Because they might see war. No home. In Egypt, as bad as it was, they had a little place to go to that was their own. And I think it's because of these things that Israel fell into the trouble of counting their bruises. They looked around and said, "Where's our food? Where's our water? Where is our place to live? Why have you brought us out in this wilderness to kill us?" And so what we understand by that end is that they focused on the bad rather than the blessings. And that's what Moses told them. In fact, as we go to the book of Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 27, he says, "You murmured in your tents." And this is what they said. "Because the Lord hated us. He has brought us out of the land of Egypt to give us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us." What? Because he hated us? No. The reason he brought them out of the land of Egypt is because he loved them. But they needed testing. They needed Egypt taken out of them. But they didn't recognize that. Later in the book of Psalms, that idea is repeated when he says, "Many times he delivered them, but they were rebellious in their purposes and were brought low through their iniquity." How often do our attitudes mimic those of Israel? How often do we see our actions and our attitudes trending down that same wilderness path that they went down? We like to complain. In fact, sometimes we find great enjoyment in complaining, don't we? Because we can work up a really righteous complaint about our situation in life. They could too. Probably more so than us. "We've only got this bitter water. We only have this manna to eat. Everybody's trying to kill us." And we make those same kinds of arguments about different situations, and I think we see that we've still got a lot of Egypt in us, don't we? So what do we do about that? Can we train our minds to operate in a fashion to accept the bruises as a necessary part of the journey that's going to lead us to the great blessings that we'll enjoy? I think that's what the Apostle Paul did. And as we read over in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he said this, "So we do not lose heart. Though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to the things that are seen," that's the bruises, "but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal." If you and I could train ourselves so that when bad things happen, we replace our grumbling and our complaining and murmuring with thanksgiving, I believe we would find the path that the Apostle Paul was on. I believe we would find the path to what it truly means to be a grateful child of God. So the question comes down to us then, do I show gratitude to God? Am I truly thankful for what He's done for me? And in answering that question, truthfully, I'm going to show myself very much where I am in progress to being the kind of Christian that I need to be.